Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer, former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we do on this podcast. We explore what that actually looks like. And we hopefully do that by me sharing things that have worked, things that have failed. I don't have it all figured out. I'm still on this journey as well. And so we're going to look at a question today connected to this series that we've been doing on project-based learning. And the question is this: how does assessment actually work in project-based learning? So let's take a dive right in. Visit a basketball court or a skate park or a rock climbing gym, and you might just miss something happening all around you. Assessment. The same is true of that group of kids huddled around their devices, building a shared world in Minecraft, or maneuvering around a kitchen, experimenting with a new recipe, or building an arcade game in a makerspace using Arduino. Assessment is everywhere. But it feels invisible because it's less like a noun and more like a verb. In other words, assessment is often something we do, not something we give or take. Nobody stops in the middle of an Ollie to take a standardized test. The test is built into it. Did you crash or not? Did the trick work? And nobody masters an Ollie only to find out that they actually failed because they did 10 Ollie attempts and they were graded on each and it averaged out to 10%. No, they know that they have it down because they've mastered it. It's not a question about good or bad types of assessments. It's a question of ownership. After all, a skater might use a scoring rubric in a competition. And there's nothing wrong with using scores and metrics. That same group of Minecrafters building a world together and just having fun geeking out in their creativity might choose to make a video and at some point put it onto YouTube. Then they might look at page views and likes and stuff like that. And that's okay. They're using the metrics in a way that is authentic. And that's the key thing. It has to feel authentic. But in order to be authentic and to feel authentic, you need to have student ownership. When kids engage in authentic projects in authentic communities, they will own the assessment process. So if you think about, again, assessment outside of school, it feels authentic. And I think we need the same thing to happen in the PBL classroom. It should be more like a skate park or a makerspace or a kitchen. It should be a space where assessment is happening all the time and everywhere. Okay, so what does this actually mean for project-based learning? In a PBL unit, you don't need to stop the project to take an assessment. Students don't need to do a weekly quiz, for example. Instead, they can engage in self-assessment, peer assessment, and teacher-directed assessment. And I want to point out that when I first shifted toward PBL, and we were doing a lot of design thinking work and things like that, I would still break the project up to give them quizzes and tests because I just didn't trust that they could own the assessment. It was a control thing. And it was a fear that I might not be assessing the right stuff if I went with a more formative approach. And I sort of viewed assessment as something for me. It was my way to prove to myself that they got it or they didn't get it. But I think that assessment is a lot bigger than this. It's an opportunity for students to see their own progress, to set goals for the future, and to determine their next steps. The assessment should be happening all over the place. Here they're judging the quality of their product, but they're also reflecting on the process and determining mastery of the standards. All right, so what does it actually look like? Let's start with self-assessment. Self-assessments have an empowering effect. Instead of attributing academic success to the teacher or to blind luck or to something like that, they're more likely to see it as a result of their hard work. They grow more self-directed, more independent, and it's because they're constantly looking at their own progress. The first thing is tracking goals. This is where students create their goals. They can be quantitative or qualitative, and then they just keep track of the progress. It could be on a graph, a progress bar, or simply just describing their progress in a more descriptive way. Another option there is self-reflections. Here students might answer reflective questions. They might talk about where they're struggling, what they're learning, their strengths, their weaknesses, what they want to do next. Or it could be a more open-ended self-assessment or self-reflection. This could be where you kind of give them a free write and just answer, you know, how am I doing right now? A more specific option is to have students fill out student surveys. Sometimes students struggle with these open-ended, big self-reflection questions, and surveys provide a blend of the objective and the subjective. They might use a Likert scale, selecting specific words from a bank, or ranking items, and all of those are great options for surveys. This added structure helps students make sense out of something in a way that's a lot more concrete, because how am I doing can feel maybe a little bit too abstract. Another option is self-assessment rubrics. Students are able to look at the progression from emerging up through mastery and look at the specific descriptions in various categories. But while that works really well, a variation of that is actually checklists. And these can be great diagnostic tools that students use before, during, or after a task, or maybe all of the above. I want to point out that pilots, doctors, and engineers all use checklists as a way to determine whether their work has fit a specific criteria. When students use checklists, they're learning how to make sense out of systems. They can use a checklist to determine their progress, to assess prototypes, to make sense out of processes, all of this. Or better yet, you can help students create their own checklists based on the criteria you've determined as a class. So there's a lot of uses for checklists. I want to point this out. If you are interested in kind of the role of checklists, one of my favorite books on this topic is called Checklist Manifesto. And I just think it's a great read. It has me passionate about the role of checklists. All right, now on to peer assessment. See, sometimes you miss critical details in self-assessment. You can't see your blind spots because they're, you know, blind spots. And in these moments, you need peer feedback to help you see a new perspective. The same is true of entire groups when they're working on a project. So it's not just that when I say peer assessment, I'm not just thinking, you know, partners meeting together. I'm thinking sometimes you need to have one person meeting with someone or one group meeting with another group to kind of break up the group think. And this is what I love about peer assessment. And so here are some of the strategies I found that work really well. The first one is the 10-minute feedback system. I want to point out that all of these are part of the assessment toolkit that's inside of the PBL toolbox. So if you download the PBL toolbox that's on this particular blog post, there is the assessment toolkit, and it includes this particular feedback system. So the 10-minute peer feedback system is kind of a cool way to have students give feedback in a structured way, and it takes 10 minutes to do. I love it. It's one of my favorites. So just putting it out there. Another one is structured feedback with sentence stems. And again, this is also in the toolkit. Here you as a teacher provide sentence stems that your students can use to provide diagnostic, clarifying, or critical feedback. Another one is the 3-2-1 structure. This is a simple thing of students having giving three strengths, two areas of improvement, and one question that they still have. Another one is similar. It's kind of the see, think, wonder. We often use that for having students look at like primary sources and things like that. But it's actually kind of a cool peer feedback system. Same thing is true of feedback carousel. This is where we have students do kind of a carousel activity and they're walking around giving feedback. They leave sticky notes and it gives them a chance to give anonymous feedback from group to group. Unlike other feedback methods, students here are offering their feedback without any original group member present. And so it's anonymous. It's sometimes a little more honest. You really have to make sure that you have a high level of trust in your classroom. If there's any sense of distrust, if the group doesn't know each other and well, that could go really, really poorly. And the final one is peer coaching. And it's similar to the student-teacher feedback system. And it's you basically have them use those same coaching questions and just do peer reflection and peer coaching back and forth. The final one is teacher assessment. And the idea here is the student-teacher conferences. And I found that these take about 5 minutes apiece, but they're really powerful. There are three different types of these conferences that I've done. The first one is the advice conference. This is where, you know, students are coming to you with advice. You're answering it. You're kind of a consultant. The next one, you're more of a coach, and you're guiding them in reflection. And this is where you ask reflection questions and they answer. And the final is the mastery conference. And this is where your focus is not on the process or the product. It's not on giving advice or reflection, but it's simply going back to those standards and asking, have you mastered those standards? Final thought here is this. Student-centered assessment boosts metacognition. Think of it this way. When students own the assessment process, they're able to figure out what they already know, what they don't know, what they need to master, what they'll do to improve. And that all fits into the metacognition cycle. The metacognition cycle is basically this. Students assess a task, then they evaluate strengths and weaknesses, and then they plan their approach, they apply strategies, and they reflect, and that leads them to further assess the task. And the metacognition cycle is often unspoken. It's something that people walk through as they do projects constantly. But as you can see, these feedback methods all fit within this metacognition. And when students increase in their metacognition, they become more and more self-directed. They're able to figure out how to navigate the confusion of the maze that goes on when they can't figure out what to do. And to me, that's the really cool part of this. It becomes a really powerful way for students to become the self-directed learners we know they can be. When students own the assessment process, they become self-directed. And when this happens, they become the independent, critical thinking, lifelong learners that you know that they can be. And so that's what it means to have student-centered assessment in the PBL framework. Hey, if you enjoyed this podcast episode, would you leave a review on either iTunes or Stitcher? That would mean the world to me. Thank you for listening. I hope you got something out of it, and go out and make something awesome.